Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Carrie Goldberg, in for Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. He's only been Pope for 4 months, but Pope Francis has surprised a lot of people with some of his statements and advocacy. He's spoken out on behalf of the poor, made dramatic overtures toward the Muslim world, and then this week, on his way back to Rome from Brazil, he was asked about gay priests. The pontiff's answer, "Who am I to judge a gay person of goodwill who seeks the Lord?"
For a very long time, the church has regarded homosexuality as taboo, or in the words of Pope Benedict, an intrinsic moral evil. So the comment from the new pope surprised and impressed many observers of the papacy. Is it an indication of the church inching toward a new tolerance?
That's the question we're going to ask two members of Boston's Catholic community. Thomas Groom is a professor of theology and religious education at Boston College. And Thomas Groom, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Anthony.
And Marianne Duddy Burke is the executive director of Dignity USA, a Boston-based group of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered Catholics. Marianne Duddy Burke, thank you for coming in.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Thomas Groom, let me start with you. Do the Pope's remarks represent a sea change, or how did you respond to them?
I think they do, Anthony. In many ways, what he said is, I'm sure, what Jesus of Nazareth would have said if he was living in our time and had contemporary consciousness around these issues, etc. So the fascinating thing about the man is that he's bringing us back to the model and to the kind of inclusivity that marked the public ministry of Jesus. I mean, one of the reasons they put him to death was because of who he was eating with, because of who he was welcoming to the table.
Mm. And Marianne, your quick response to this, does this represent a sea change or one small step in this journey?
I've heard it described really well as kind of a lean in the right direction. Mm-hmm. But in other ways, it's such a marked contrast from the kinds of rhetoric that we have heard coming from Francis's predecessors, you know, where LGBT people have been described as, you know, as you said, as intrinsically evil, as a threat to civilization, as doing violence to children. I mean, the kind of horrific burdens that have been put on LGBT people and our families by the leaders of our church just all of a sudden came off of people's shoulders in a very significant way. So from a pastoral standpoint, you know, and from a symbolic standpoint, the Pope's words have just been transformative for a lot of people.
Wow, that's amazing to hear. But I want to be clear about something, because as I sort of read into this, it seems like he was expressing an idea about forgiveness or openness, but church doctrine still stands. It still regards homosexuality as an objective disorder, and men who appear to have a quote, deep-seated homosexual tendencies are still barred from the priesthood. So, Thomas Groom, respond to that. I mean, why is it so significant?
You see, and I'm not sure that's true, Anthony, that they're still barred from priesthood. Now, that is still the law on the books, shall we say. So, and he was talking, he was asked about the issue of gay men in the priesthood. And, of course, he's recognizing the fact that we've had gay men in the priesthood since the beginning of the church. Gay bishops, gay popes, I'm sure.
It just hasn't been recognized.
It just hasn't been recognized. Yeah. And not just has it not been recognized, but has been denied and suppressed and held clandestinely and all the rest of it. So there's a certain openness and freshness, and obviously, and then I think those comments have to be set in the context of that whole interview, which was an hour and 20 minutes, in which he said other things, like, for example, that remarried Catholics, that we've got to show mercy to them. That was his comment pertaining to their reception of Holy Communion. So in other words, this was a comment made in the context of talking about mercy, forgiveness, inclusivity, welcome, respect for all people. So in that sense, it takes on even greater meaning, it seems to me.
Mm. And Marianne, do you think it leads to the point where the church will change its stance on homosexuality or gay priests in particular? Is that where this is heading?
Well, I think what I see being recognized here is the fact that the church has actually already undergone a tremendous shift in its attitudes around LGBT people. And by the church here, I'm talking about the people of God. You know, we have seen Catholics in the U.S. and in many countries around the world come to know many LGBT people in their families. You know, they go to our weddings, they welcome our kids into their families. What we're seeing here, I think, is a small shift in where the leadership of our church is. You know, even the fact that the Pope used the word gay rather than, you know, the much more kind of clinical and off-putting terms that the church leaders often use to talk about our community shows that, you know, that there's an awareness of culture, that his experience as a pastor out among people is really informing what he brings to the papacy. And I think that has to trickle down. I mean, to me, what it shows is a willingness that is very consistent with what we've seen from the Pope to walk with the marginalized, to say this is where the church needs to be. And if the church as a whole is willing to continue to walk with LGBT people and understand what our lives is, understand what the experience of our marginalization is all across the globe, I don't see how that doesn't, over time, lead to policy shifts or and big shifts in the kind of pastoral relationship that people have with the church.
And Thomas, how long or what has to happen for these kinds of attitude to trickle down from the top and really make a difference at the sort of grassroots level?
That's a fascinating question, Anthony, because in many ways, in 4 short months, this Pope has brought more positive attention back to the Catholic Church than we've seen probably in the previous 35 years, 36 years, when you'd count the pontificates of John Paul II and Benedict. I mean, I have former Catholics, fallen away Catholics, you know, alienated Catholics, and some of my Protestant friends and my Jewish neighbors across the street are saying to me, oh, this man is fascinating, you know, this is what we need to hear.
But, sure. And I think the other audience, you know, the other group of folks who are watching carefully what Francis is doing are the bishops and cardinals around the world, of course. And
this gets to this issue of trickling down. Right?
Exactly. So I think, you know, as they start taking their cues from Francis in some way, you know, which they will.
That's good bishops. You just watch.
You know, in that hierarchical structure, you know, we look to the top still, you know, for better
blessings.
or in many ways for worse. But I start thinking about what impact does Francis's words have on bishops, you know, in Uganda, you know, where they're considering a law that would make homosexuality a capital offense, you know, punishable by death. Does this put additional pressure on the Bishop of Uganda, where 40% of the people are Catholic, to stand up for human dignity and against capital punishment? You know, does it start shifting the way in which bishops around the world have been in the forefront of trying to maintain restrictive laws about LGBT people? Does it change the kinds of homilies that are given in Sunday parishes so parents no longer have to worry about, you know, am I going to hear something horrible about my kid when I go to Mass this Sunday? I
mean, and it sounds like you're saying that the answer is yes, it probably does.
I think it very well could over time. And all of that is significant and leads to change in culture and down the road, hopefully change in the kinds of experience of church we all have together.
But is there any risk at all that it might create a sort of a divisive schism in the church?
See, I don't think so, Anthony. See, Catholics have no great tradition of schism. You know, with good Protestants, if you don't like your church, well, you can always, you know, split off and find another one or establish another one, like what's going on in the Anglican Communion.
Sure.
But Catholics have typically got a tradition of hanging in with the church, even if we perceive it at times to be sinful, dysfunctional, abusive or whatever. If you stay, you usually, now there could be, I suppose, people who would consider breaking away. But I think that would be a very small group. I think Marianne's comments are very well placed. And I would even add that not only the bishops are watching him, but the politicians, the culture is watching him. Because I saw a fairly conservative Republican blog the other day that was basically saying, look, if the Pope in Rome can change his position on gay rights and the dignity of gay people, then surely the Republican Party, and then it went on from there. But it was fascinating to see how the religious symbols were calling in question some of our cultural practices. And of course, religious symbols have that power to not just influence the people of faith, but to permeate the whole culture.
the real power of moral example there.
Exactly.
Well, fascinating conversation. Thank you both for coming in. Thomas Groom is a professor of theology and religious education at Boston College, and Marianne Duddy Burke is the executive director of Dignity USA. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, filmmaker Jay Craven talks about a new model for independent films centered around student learning. I'm Carrie Goldberg.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.